Broadcasting from Boston, Massachusetts, you're listening to the Technology Equals Equality podcast.
Welcome back to the Technology Equals Equality podcast. I'm your host, Lori Brooks, and this is episode 42. I am super pleased to welcome to the show today Dean Bakari, husband, father, self-improvement guru, and creator of Flashbooks, self-help and business book summaries you can read or listen to in under 20 minutes. Dean is also a blogger and fellow podcaster at MeaningfulHQ.com, the self-improvement and motivation blog and podcast that teaches you how to live like you give a damn.
Dean, tell us a story of how it is you once saw the future before you decided to begin branding yourself and really building out, you know, your business.
Well, all right, so I worked out of college. I worked for a tobacco company. I got a job actually working in the marketing industry for a tobacco company. And that was, it certainly wasn't something I intended on doing for long. I wanted to move to California. I knew I wanted to be here. And so that job gave me an opportunity to move from the DC metro area to California. What I didn't realize back then, which I realized a couple of years into working for the company, was, you know, number one, I'm working here way longer than I had intended on working for this company because it's not in line with my dreams. And number two, I had this realization that, you know what, this is not contributing to the greater good by in any way, shape, or form. In fact, it's like the opposite. If you could find like the opposite of something that contributes to the greater good, it would be working for like a tobacco company. And so, you know, there were times, you know, a couple of years in where I'd really start asking and wondering, like, man, what the heck am I doing? This is not conducive to just a fulfilling lifestyle in general. And then I started kind of feeling guilty because the way that I saw it and the way that I continue to view it today is I was contributing to the death of millions and millions of people around the world because I was part of that organization. And so I really started to question myself and question my real priorities. Am I just working at this job for, you know, the paycheck and because I'm really good at the job that I do? Am I working here because I really enjoy it and it's in line with my purpose, my vision, and my values? And so I couldn't answer the previous question with integrity, and so I had to figure out another way. And then I started reading books about, you know, lifestyle design, starting your own business, and, you know, figuring out what it is that you really want to do with your career, and in a way that allows you to kind of be fulfilled both personally and professionally, right? So I read books like 4-Hour Workweek, and that book really helped me a lot in terms of, you know, saying you don't have to kill yourself every day from 9 to 5. You can actually figure out a way to, you know, create a business that allows you to enjoy your life as well. And so I started working on that. And there, I started out of my kitchen, actually. I started the podcast out of my kitchen. I started Flashbooks, which is our primary business, the book summaries, nonfiction book summaries, kind of like Cliff's Notes for professionals. I started that out of my kitchen. And just a few years later, we're now in a place where we are, this year we'll be bringing in a little over $500,000 in revenues. And it's crazy to think back on, you know, I talk to my wife about it all the time, like, man, I started this out of our kitchen. You know, and that's how that was my vision. My vision was to figure out a way to quit my job, to quit the survival job, to stop doing something that I didn't like to do, and to figure out a way to do what I'm great at, to do what I'm passionate about, and to combine those two things in a way that allows me to serve people in a unique way. And so that was my vision. My vision was to be able to do that and to enjoy my life. You know, to do what I want with who I wanted and wherever I wanted. And, you know, thankfully now we're in a place where I get to do that, and I couldn't be more grateful.
I love the way you explain your real first steps of having that epiphany moment and really recognizing this is not something that I'm passionate about, and in the grand scheme of things, it's probably not contributing to the greater good. And that real moment where you had a wake-up call and you began educating yourself and moving forward towards building out your own business. But I want to take it back just a little bit, because I'm curious, why was it you wanted to move to Cali in the first place?
So the reason why I wanted to move to California from the like the DC metro area, which is where I went to college, and kind of born and raised in New York, moved from New York to Texas, moved from Texas to Virginia, and finished out high school, went to college in Virginia. And, you know, I didn't really know what I wanted to do all throughout just being younger and being a young student in my teens, going to college. My whole sort of priority was to go to law school and become a lawyer. Why? The reasoning was simply that that's what everybody told me that I should do. You know, that's what that seemed like the right thing to do. It seemed like the path that would allow me to, you know, kind of bring in financial security and just do it, you know, and just kind of be in line with the status quo, which is what a lot of people end up doing. And so I didn't really question, what is it that you really want to do? And I just kind of followed along with what everybody else told me that I should be doing. And so that's what I did. I graduated from college with a degree in political science and philosophy as well. And then I was going into law school. I was legitimately about to go to school, to law school, get a law degree. And that was when I kind of had my turning point, where I remember kind of getting the acceptance letter and all that's the package, you know, that they send you in the mail when you're getting ready to go. And I remember looking at it and I'm thinking like, dude, is this really what I want to do? Do I really want to become an attorney? Nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with becoming an attorney. But is this what I want to do? Is this really allowing me to contribute at the highest level? And I couldn't answer that question. And so, and then I had the idea that, oh, you know what, maybe at the time I was also, while I was in college, I was doing like some modeling. And I thought, oh, you know what, maybe I should try this out. And so I thought, okay, well, I don't have really any, I don't have a sustainable job to take me from Virginia to California. So I need to find a job that will allow me to pursue a career as a model. And so I found that job, you know, I found that job with Big Tobacco, and they moved me out from Virginia to California. It ended up working out really, really well at the time for me, because it seemed like everything was going exactly the way that I wanted it to. They moved me from where I didn't want to be to where I did want to be. They paid for everything. There was a car waiting for me when I got off the airplane. They helped me with room and boarding. You know, they really took care of me in that sense. And so I worked my marketing job for Big Tobacco by day, and I would go to auditions, and I would go, you know, to other modeling jobs and stuff like that, in between, either in between meetings with clients or after work. Luckily, my schedule was really flexible with the tobacco company. And so and then I eventually kind of got stuck in the rut. I stopped going to auditions. I stopped doing that. And because things were getting really busy with the marketing job at Big Tobacco. And apparently I was really great at that job from what they kept on telling me. So they're giving me this ego boost. I'm doing the job. I'm climbing the corporate ladder. What I didn't realize is that it was leaning up against the wrong wall, you know? And so then I started thinking, okay, well, I'm not really into this modeling thing either. It's not really working out very well for me, first of all. And second of all, long term, how am I going to contribute? That was always my question. Not only is this something that you should be passionate about, but is it going to allow you to contribute in the long term? You know what I mean? And is it going to allow you to do that in a for the greater good? And obviously, I couldn't do that with Big Tobacco. Obviously, I couldn't do that with a modeling career. So not to mention that I really wasn't good at modeling in the first place anyway. And then one day I kind of stumbled upon this when I was at going to the I had to go for like a casting call or something like that at our agency in LA, and they called me in, and across the hall was this like class that was going on that said become a host. And I thought, huh, that's kind of cool, that's interesting. And so I kind of peeked in there, and I was curious, and so I went for their like free class thing that they do, and then I ended up enrolling. And basically, it's kind of like, you know, they would teach you how to become a host. Is essentially like a speaker, right? It's essentially like becoming a speaker, but you're hosting either on live television or a live event like an MC, or you're hosting like a podcast or an online radio show, or, you know, some kind of broadcast related thing. So it's speaking in that sense. And so I started taking those classes, and I really loved it. It was really, really, it kind of fired me up. It got me excited. And so I realized, you know what, this is what I want to do. I want to not only host and speak, but I want to be able to inspire other people to do what they're great at and to contribute at their highest level of service. And so I started, you know, that's where I kind of started. Eventually I ended up quitting my job for the tobacco company because it was stressing me out. I felt guilty about the job that I was doing. I just couldn't handle it on my conscience. And so I quit that job, and that's when sort of the real struggle began. Because here I am, I quit this job prematurely without figuring out a way to sustain myself financially. And I thought that the savings that I'd saved up was going to be enough to help me go get through it until I started something sustainable and, you know, I started a business of my own. But that didn't happen. And so I went through some really, really tough times at that point. And luckily, you know, I was able to kind of pull my socks back up and get up, stand up, dust myself off after falling down a million and a half times. And eventually I started this podcast, Meaningful Show, which has exploded, especially over the last year. And then I started our book summary site, Flash Books, Flash Notes, where we summarize books, business books and self-improvement books. And that's really been incredibly successful. And so those two things, working on those consistently and day after day after day, just taking small steps daily, improving a little bit every day, really helped me get back on my feet. And I honest to God, couldn't be happier. It's remarkable what you can accomplish if you just kind of stick with it.
Baby steps. It doesn't matter which direction you're taking them, they'll take you somewhere.
Yeah.
It's just baby steps, you know, and I absolutely love the podcast, by the way, the self-improvement podcast. And just going back to that, I was listening to episode 103 earlier today, Muhammad Ali's Secret. And it's funny because I was going to ask you, you know, what you feel was your secret to success. But of course, in this episode, you really wrapped it up well. So I'd love to touch on that really quick in terms of the growth mindset, and your feelings towards that growth mindset. If you wouldn't mind just summarizing that, because I think it's an important piece, you know, when discussing any sort of entrepreneurial journey, for those to hear what it is others feel helped them achieve that success. So,
yeah, absolutely. I think that so a growth mindset is the type of mindset that says, I, instead of saying I am a failure when they fall down, they say, I have failed, but I can try again. That's what a growth mindset says. A fixed mindset allows themselves to be defined by failure. They believe, so what I've realized, and this is huge, Lori, failure is an event. It is not a person. Failure is an event. You should not allow yourself to ever be defined by your failures. Look at failures as challenges. Look at failures as things that can help you grow. And I don't even like using the word, you know, failure. I look at them as a challenge. I look at them as when things, setbacks and things like that happen, issues arise. Rather than kind of beat myself up about it and just ruminating over it, I try to figure out, okay, you know what? How can I grow from this? How can I become better from this? What can I do differently the next time around so that I don't fall down and get as hurt as I did the last time, you know? And always growing, always figuring out a way to come back. That's what a growth mindset individual thinks, and that's their perception on life, their outlook, both personally and professionally. So going back to the Muhammad Ali thing, you know, I was reading about that story in a book, an excellent book, by the way, called Mindset, and written by Dr. Carol Dweck. And what she talks about in the book is, you know, what Muhammad Ali wasn't by any measure as athletic as he didn't have the same right technique. He wasn't strategic in terms of the way that he boxed. He actually boxed all wrong, which is so interesting because I didn't even know that until after. I just thought he looked really cool in the you know what I mean, in the ring when he was doing all that stuff. And you know, he'd expose his chin and like he'd, you know, he would just kind of rally his punches, and he wouldn't really have any strategic intent, it seemed like, when he was inside of the ring with somebody else. And
hockey.
What's that? Yeah, real cocky. And that was apparently kind of like part of his strategy. Whenever he was asked, you know, what is it that, what was your secret? What was the thing that gave you that edge? Because you obviously, you aren't as talented. You don't measure up compared to people like Sonny Liston, but you're beating people like Sonny Liston. And he would say that, you know, I don't win in the ring. I win up here, and he'd point at his head, you know? And I think that's pretty profound to have such unwavering belief and self-confidence in yourself in that sense, that no matter what, you're going to figure out a way to get through it, to succeed, to excel. And so that's what a growth mindset is, figuring out a way no matter what.
Dean, thank you. I absolutely love that. And that's exactly what I was looking for, because it's funny, the way I normally express that to the audience is that there's no such thing as failure. There's only feedback. As long as you can learn from the moment, there's no such thing as failure. But when I heard you explain that in that episode, that failure is not a person, it's an event. It's not a person. I just love the way you were explaining that. So I thank you for sharing that.
Absolutely.
Definitely. What do you feel was the most difficult part for you in achieving your success? What do you think was the piece that you struggled with the most throughout the startup when you were taking those first steps and, you know, going to the classes, beginning to educate yourself, reading books, listening to podcasts, you know, going through the motions? What do you feel was the hardest piece for you in terms of beginning this journey?
Staying consistent, keeping my head up when it felt like it was time to give up. The pressure that comes from feeling like, you know what, other people don't understand what I'm trying to do right now. Your family, your friends, you know, them not getting it. You know, them not realizing that, hey, you know, you're trying to do something that is out of the box and you really believe in yourself and, you want to make this happen. But a lot of times, you know, people don't understand the traditional mindset, the traditional approach to, you know, your career is you know, go to school, get a job. It's not go to school, graduate, try out something that has nothing to do with whatever it is that you went to school for, and then let that go, and then try something else, and then let that go, and then try something else, and then get into a million entrepreneurial endeavors until you figure out what it is that you want. That's not really what most people's idea is when it comes to a sustainable career. And so, you know, it was just keeping my head up when it felt like everyone was telling me to, you know, just go back to the safe, secure job. And I also need to say that, you know, the one person that was sort of always there supporting me was my wife. I'm not so sure if I would have been able to do it and succeed if it weren't for her, you know, unwavering belief and constant support. It's really powerful. It's really important. You know, I think there's another thing that, like, if there's one thing that you need to make sure that you have kind of locked down, if you're going to be trying something new, entrepreneurially speaking, if you're going to try a new business venture, if you're going to try something that is going to be really tough and require a lot of grit and has and you can potentially fail and fail pretty darn bad, I would say to make sure that you talk to your spouse, your significant other, your boyfriend, your girlfriend, whatever, and make sure that you guys are in line and make sure that that person is supporting you, because that's the person that you spend, you know, 80%+ of your time with, that you see every day, that you tell your problems about, that you smile with, you cry with, you're sad with, you're there for each other. And if that person can't be supportive, if that person can't, you know, give you words of encouragement when things just pretty much suck, then it's really going to be tough. It's really going to be tough. So.
Definitely. No, I agree 100%. My husband does help with the business and has always been, you know, 100% supportive of every crazy idea I come up with on this end. Funny, you know, when speaking to other entrepreneurs, we really do focus on the idea of making sure that you surround yourself with positive peers, positive individuals, those who will give you those words of encouragement, whoever that may be. But definitely 100%. It's funny that you're the first guest to bother saying that. You know, your spouse definitely needs to be one of the first and foremost people that are in line with all of these ideas and what it is that you're planning to do. So that was excellent. I love that, Dean. That was very sweet. So, you know, it's funny. I was going to ask you, how did you become such a natural with, you know, the show and the way that you conduct yourself in the interviews and even in this interview where I'm interviewing you? And I think that is a real credit to the courses that you happen to mention that you had enrolled in.
Yeah, you know, the short answer is I'm not. You know, I'm not. It takes practice. I think that the majority of things that people seem to be naturally gifted at are learned. They're not natural gifts. So for me, speaking is something that's learned. I have to practice it every single day. And not even have to, I want to, I enjoy it. I love doing it. And so I practice it every single day on a daily basis. And so I think practice doesn't make perfect. Practice makes progress, constant, consistent progress. And, as long as you're doing that, you're good to go. And I think that just doing something every day towards helping you improve upon your craft is crucial. You know, Stephen King, whom everybody knows, you know, the famous writer, he says that for throughout his entire, you know, career, he, no matter what, every single morning has the same exact ritual where he will sit down at his desk and he'll write, you know, nothing gets in the way of that. And so I always try to remember that when I feel like, you know, slacking off on some day or whatever. I get up and I work on my craft. I think that's important.
Practice definitely does create progress. It's not going to create perfection by any means, but practice definitely will create progress in whatever field it is you choose to venture into.
Absolutely.
Really designed to help entrepreneurs come up with ideas for different kinds of companies or in an industry, you know, that they may not have thought of previously. So, Dean, we would love to help you. If you had a magic wand and could change anything at all in your business, what would it be and why?
If I had a magic wand, that's an awesome question. I love that. So 80% of people, or 70-something percent of people in the United States at least, and I'm willing to bet that it's like this in the world across the globe as well, but 70-something percent of people are unfulfilled with the work that they do. Now, that doesn't mean that they hate their jobs necessarily, but it does mean that they're just kind of shrugging their shoulders about it. They're not excited about it. And then that also includes that other percentage of people who absolutely hate their jobs, right? So they're either disengaged or actively disengaged. And so that's a huge chunk of people that's not excited about the work that they do, you know, 70 plus percent. And that other remaining small percentage of people, that 27, whatever, 30% of people, who are doing what they love to do, who are excited and enthusiastic and can't wait to get up. You know, they beat their alarm clock before it startles them awake in the morning, and they get up because they're so pumped about the work that they're about to do. And not only that, but the work that they do serves people in a meaningful way. They do something that matters. Maybe it doesn't matter necessarily to their friends or their coworkers, but it matters to them individually. That doesn't matter if you're a mother or a janitor or you're running a Fortune 500 company. Something meaningful to you that you're great at, that you are passionate about, and that you can serve others with. And so if I could wave that magic wand and flip and reverse that number, that statistic around, from 70% of people being, you know, disengaged with the work that they do, being unfulfilled with that work, and 30% only being actually, you know, fulfilled with the work that they do, if I could flip that around and make it 70 plus percent of people who are fulfilled with their work and are doing meaningful work on a daily basis, that's what I would do, because that would create such a dramatic effect. Just the ripple effect on that would just be insane, because the guy who doesn't like his job right now would go home, and instead of being wiped out and not wanting to talk to his wife and not having enough energy to play with his kids and feeling down on himself because his boss yelled at him that day, would, instead of doing that, start coming home happy. He would start coming home sort of emotionally fulfilled. And then that would translate into him smiling at his wife and saying, "I love you." It would translate into him having a little extra energy to play with his kid or kids. It would translate into him, you know, just sitting down and working on himself a little bit more on a daily basis. And so I think that's huge. The work we do, I mean, we spend 65% of our waking hours working. Shouldn't that be something that we enjoy?
It certainly should. It should be something that we not only enjoy, but absolutely love. It should be something that is a true passion for everyone. It's something that I think is really sad, and I did not realize that statistic was as high as it is. So it sounds like the wand has some work. Instead of a time machine, we need to switch dimensions here.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
A couple, and get the audience to work, definitely. But Dean, please share the best way for our listeners to find you.
You can contact me on meaningfulhq.com. That's meaningful, like the word, and hq.com, meaningfulhq.com, and you can get in touch with me there. You can contact me. You can check out the podcast, and you can read some of our self-improvement-related articles. And for the nonfiction book summaries, you can get in touch and contact us there at getflashnotes.com. And those are the two primary places. Twitter, twitter.com/DeanBakari. You can get in touch with me there as well.
Excellent. All right, Dean. Well, thank you. Thank you once again for sharing. We truly appreciate you taking the time.
Well, thank you, Lori. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on.
If you're not doing something that allows you to perform at your highest level and contribute to the greater good, take a step back. Be sure to check out Dean over at meaningfulhq.com, or you can always check him out through our show notes page at technologyequality.com/DeanBakari. Technology Equality Community, I just want to say thank you, thank you, thank you once again for tuning in this week. I truly appreciate you guys taking the time out of your day to check out the show. Don't forget to subscribe. Click that subscribe button in iTunes or Podbean, whichever platform you like best, so that you don't miss an episode. And until our next episode, when we continue to hear the journey, find the pain, and create solutions, enjoy the week.